Well, one of my first questions here, Frank, you know, you talked a lot about the importance it is for consumers to really take care of their own credit and watch that kind of stuff. You can kind of talk a little bit more about that, like the responsibility that we have as individual consumers.
Yeah, and a great example of that is I'm in my third year as an ambassador to the AARP's Fraud Watch Network. I helped develop the Fraud Watch Network, and what had happened is a few years ago, AARP has 40 million members. So they surveyed all 40 million members and said, what's the number one thing you're concerned and worried about? To their amazement was fraud. That was the number one thing. So AARP started to say, well, let's look around and see what programs are out there to do. And they went to government agencies, state agencies. They looked at public programs. There were no good programs. So they created the Fraud Watch Network, and they hired me to help them create it, help content. So I go out about 10 days out of the year, 10 states, and speak to thousands of folks about all the scams perpetrated against the elderly. So those scams are perpetrated because the majority of people are honest, and because they're honest, they don't have a deceptive mind. So if the phone rings and they walk over to it and the caller ID says that it is the Green Bay Police Department, because it's very easy to manipulate the caller ID, they pick it up assuming it is a Green Bay Police Department. And of course, one of the most common scams now, the grandparent scam, is to simply say to them, hi, this is Sergeant Ryan, Green Bay Police Department. Unfortunately, we arrested your grandson today for DWI. He was driving in this vehicle. He was with his girlfriend. They give the girlfriend's name. They get everything from social media, so they sound like they know everything, and simply say, he has one call. He asked us not to call his parents. He asked us to call you. He needs to post bail. If he doesn't post it in the next 2 hours, I'll spend the weekend in jail. Well, how do I do that? Well, you can just give me a credit card number. It's $500. We'll post his bail and he can go. Millions of people fall for that every single day because they don't know any better. But again, if you go out and explain it to them, show them how it works, next time they get that call, they know that that's a scam.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Can you expand on your idea earlier on how a lack of ethics has contributed to the rise in white-collar crime?
Yeah, I think, you know, everything comes down to an individual's character and ethics. So what amazes me is all the embezzlement. That's an area that I deal in and I teach as well at the academy. It's seen the amazing rise in embezzlement from the bookkeeper at the church who steals the money to the person in the doctor's office who steals the money. And I'm not talking 10,000, 20,000, you know, steals 200,000, steals $300,000. It's just amazing. And all that comes down to is that lack of character and ethics. And all I'm saying is this has nothing really to do with religion, though all my three sons and my five grandchildren gone to Catholic school, as I have and as my wife has. What was interesting to me when my boys were going to Catholic school, I would go to the basketball game and the man next to me was obviously Jewish. So I would say to him, real interested, if you mind me asking you why you send your kids to this Catholic school. And he said, well, to be honest with you, I send them here because they stand up when the teacher walks in the classroom, a guest comes in, they say yes sir, no sir, they pray. They teach them about ethics and character. They're not going to get in a public school or even a traditional private school. So I send them here. It's worth my entire wife's salary to send them here. So I think that's an important thing, but we've missed that in the public school environment. And I think we think it's about teaching morality. It's not. It's just really teaching right and wrong. You know yourself, as you see today, especially someone like me, I'm 69, I have to travel on a plane every day, how discourteous young people are, how they step in front of you, that they knock you down. You know, when I was a kid, you were taught to respect older people, let them always go first, hold the door for them. They're not being taught that, so they don't do it because no one said to them to hold the door or treat someone with some respect. And so, and I think that hurts our society, and it also has a lot to do with why we see a rise in those types of white-collar crimes.
In white-collar crimes, I worked at a paper down in Arkansas, it was probably about 10 years ago. We had two kind of major embezzlement cases. One was actually somebody embezzling from accounts of senior citizens at the nursing home. Another was from an employer. And they both got very light sentences. Do we need to have stronger sentences to deter these crimes?
And let me just give you some figures because it is mind-boggling, but you can check them out. It's public record. Because I deal with crimes against the agencies of the federal government, Last year, our Medicare and Medicaid paid out $100 billion of the taxpayers' money in fraudulent claims. That was 10% of their combined budget went to criminals. The IRS paid out $5.8 billion in tax refunds because someone filed using somebody else's tax return. We had $7.7 billion in unemployment fraud. We had $10 billion in food stamp fraud. It's billions. I told someone years ago I used to work in the millions. I only work in the billions now. It's billions and billions of dollars that we send out. So these embezzlement cases, these cases of fraud, amount to enormous amounts of money that are taken from the American taxpayer. And what's real unfortunate is you follow the money, and most of that money leaves the country because it's a lot of gangs from China, from Russia. But it eventually comes back to our economy, but in the form of drug trafficking, human trafficking, child pornography. So it's absolutely amazing how much money we allow people to steal and then bring that money back into our country. So one of the most common emails I get literally every week, I can read the first paragraph and then close my eyes because unfortunately they're pretty much the same. So it says, Dear Mr. Abagnale, I own a small graphics company in Southern California. I had a bookkeeper stole $50,000 from me. I caught her. I had her arrested. I pressed charges. I went to court. I gave depositions. On the second day of the trial, the district attorney turned around and said they copped a plea, 8 years probation, no restitution. He said, I'm calling you because I'm out $50,000. This person's driving a brand new car, lives in a brand new house. I'm going to have to file bankruptcy. Is there no recourse? So I always tell people, yes, you have a great recourse. You file a 1099 on that person. Because under the rules of the IRS, money stolen by theft is taxable income. So by filing a 1099, you get a $50,000 write-off. The IRS will go after that individual, but they have the power to take their car, take their home, garnish their wages. So just the threat of a 1099 a lot of times makes people pay up because they don't want the IRS coming after them. So there are solutions to those problems, but I wish we didn't have those problems to begin with if we simply had stronger controls. And I would just add to this when it gets to embezzlement, I tell every company you have a moral obligation to keep your employees honest. So if I have a bookkeeper who writes my checks, signs my checks, reconciles my bank account, I have failed to segregate those duties, it is only a matter of time till that bookkeeper is going to steal from me. Because everyone in their life has something happen. They have a sick child, they have a sick family member, they have gone through a bankruptcy, they're going to lose their home, and they do something they wouldn't normally do, but you've given them the option to do it. If you give them opportunity, you put people in a very bad place. That's why we have controls, so that Helen says, well, I could never do that because anything I sign, Mary has to co-sign, or Mary has to check, and Mary has to approve. You do those controls so you eliminate the possibility of embezzlement. But unfortunately, a lot of companies don't do that, so they actually put the employee in a position to steal, and they end up stealing from the company.
One of my questions, last questions that I have, is talk a little bit about where do you think the future is going? I mean, with passwords and things like that.
The future is going to get very scary because here's the truth. We, right up until now, present day, cyber is all about stealing money, stealing data, so it's a financial crime. But we have the ability right now to shut someone's pacemaker off, but we have to be within 35 feet of them. And we can control their pacemaker, we can speed it up, we can shut it down, or any bodily device they have on them run by a chip or a computer. My question is, how in 5 years would you not be able to do that from 100 miles or 50 miles or 25 miles away? So for assassination purposes, or eliminate someone. We have the ability now, if we're chasing a car at high speed, we test these at Quantico. We can take a vehicle and be within 35 feet of the vehicle, and we can take over the car. We can lock the windows, lock the car, turn on the airbag, shut the power engine off, all because it's controlled by computers and chips. So we know we can do that now. We do it all the time. So the question is, if I can do it now, but I have to be 35 feet, why wouldn't I be able to do that 5 years from now from 3 miles away or 500 miles away or 5,000 miles away? So I think cyber is going to get a lot blacker. It's going to become more of a crime to take over the electrical grid, to shut down dams, to do a lot more worse damage than it is now as just a financial crime against a company or an individual.
In the movie, I saw you meticulously take Pan Am decals, make phony checks. now with these about a dozen or so companies where you can order checks online, and most checks are truncated, never go back to the